1460 WVOX.
Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to the Sons of the American Legion radio report on WVOX AM 1460 and heard around the world on WVOX.com. This is Jack McGuirk along with Ken Kracher and John Charan, bringing you this half hour of discussion of issues related to veterans and the active military. Now, here's Ken.
Hey, thanks, Jack, and good afternoon, everyone listening on WVOX to the Sons of the American Legion report. And we have a special guest, John Charan, on the line calling from Washington, and that is Congressman Phil Rowe. Congressman, how are you today?
I'm doing great, and actually have the privilege of not being in Washington. I'm still in Tennessee, so we won't go back until tomorrow.
Okay, sir. Well, you're a member of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, chaired by Congressman Miller of Florida. I had a chance to sit in on one of your meetings in Washington earlier this year. Your committee is doing a great job taking care of our veterans with many projects through the Department of Veterans Affairs. The day I was there, there was a discussion about building five new hospitals for the VA, one in Las Vegas, one in New Orleans, and one in Florida that seemed to be problematic. What are some of the issues and opportunities with building the new VA medical facilities?
Well, Ken, one of the so the folks know my background, I'm a physician and practiced medicine for 31 years before I ran for Congress, and had the opportunity to build not only office buildings for myself, but be involved in the construction of two hospitals in our local community. And for me, it just astonished me to how the VA goes about contracting. What you typically do in the private world is you find out, number one, you establish your need, and then you establish how many beds you're going to need, and then you establish your financing. Can you afford to pay for those beds once you build it? And then, obviously, there are change orders that occur in there. You run into things when you're constructing. What's your plot of land look like? What footprint's a building going to have? And ultimately, can we pay for it? The way the VA does things is they allocate a certain amount of money and then start the planning process. And in Florida, when you were there, what absolutely blew my mind was the fact that they didn't have an adequate set. The builder was there asking for help, as you remember. They started the construction with what looked to me like inadequate engineering architectural plans, and started having all these change orders as they went through, which are incredibly costly. And from my standpoint, where I was sitting, the diocese I was sitting, didn't add value to patient care. And so I think we can do a much better job. I know that Congresswoman Brown is very frustrated by it, about a delay in that. The VA ought to be able to do a better job in its contracting and certainly get a set of plans, architectural plans and engineering plans, that are pretty well set. I mean, I was a mayor of Johnson City before I came up to D.C., and that's absolutely how we did things. We had the plans. You bid those out, and then you had someone come in. Usually, if they came in underbid, they made a little extra money. This poor contractor is about to go broke building this thing down. There have been so many changes to it.
It seems surprising that giving the VA some understanding that they hadn't built a new hospital in 15 years, that they would have used the first hospital in that sequence in Las Vegas as kind of a prototype, you know, just like the Navy does when they build ships, that then the following ones would be fairly similar. Because I would think the services are fairly similar, one hospital to another. Where do you think they ran into problems? Is it just inadequate planning?
I think it was. And when you look at, building a hospital is not new. And like the Navy, building an aircraft carrier, they've got more than one aircraft carrier. And hospitals are built all the time in this country. And I sense when government does it like that, and you see cost overruns everywhere, there's no reason for those. Private businesses can't survive doing that. And again, I want to save those dollars, Ken, for patient care for our veterans, or prosthesis, or disability claims, or whatever it may be. So we need to do a better job. It's our job on oversight and investigation to make sure, and I'm on that subcommittee to make sure that the VA does its job. I don't know whether we'll have time or not, but I know what I hear in my district all the time and from veterans around the country when I speak are the delay in getting their backlog of claims. And when I went to first got to Congress, I've just been there two terms. This is only my second term. I was astonished by the number of backlogs. Let me give you some data. In 2009, the VA completed about 977,000 claims, but for the first time in VA's history, took in over a million new claims. In 2010, they completed a million claims, but got 1.2 million new claims in. In 2011, they expect to receive about 1.45 million, a double-digit increase in the last 2 years. So Secretary Shinseki has made it a priority to get these claims done, this backlog done, where a veteran won't wait any more than 125 days for a decision on their claim with a 98% accuracy rate. And he's going to try to complete this by 2014 or 2015. That's a big job, but it needs to be done. I mean, I see these veterans waiting years to get a decision. It shouldn't be like that.
Absolutely, Congressman. I know one of the issues that we have followed, and we're talking with Congressman Phil Rowe of Tennessee, is that the system in the Department of Defense for medical records doesn't exactly match the record-keeping processing system in the Department of Veterans Affairs. So when a soldier or sailor leaves the military and goes into the VA system, there's a backlog in being able to transfer their records. Until recently, maybe it's more on the older veterans, that they haven't been able to electronically transfer the records. Do you see any improvement in that situation?
Yeah, it's a big undertaking. When I got there, I did not realize, and you bring up a great point, that the VA, the government, had spent $10 billion, that's with a B, not million, billion dollars, trying to have the DOD and VA communicate. Well, you know you're a freshman congressman when one of the trips you take, it's called a CODEL, a congressional delegation trip, is to Great Lakes, Illinois in January when it's 4 below zero. So I went up there to look at how the VA and the DOD there are trying to make that work. You've got good people that are trying to get that to work. It's mandatory because first of all, for errors, you cut down on errors, and secondly, just the speed at which you can take care of things and the seamless transition. We have to do that. And what we're trying to do, what the General Shinseki, our Secretary of the VA, is doing, is starting a lifetime virtual electronic record so that when a young soldier, sailor, airman, or marine joins up, takes the oath at 18 to 20 years old, whenever it is, that record will follow them the rest of their career until they are buried in a VA cemetery. So we're getting there, but the transition is incredibly difficult. There are so many veterans out there.
And, Congressman, one of the absolute key concerns for the returning veterans from the Iraq-Afghanistan wars is the PTSD symptoms that seem to be affecting hundreds of thousands of returning veterans. We saw that the VA made a commitment recently to hire about 1,500 more mental health workers. But I guess General Shinseki spoke to your committee recently and said that may not be enough. What's your read on the situation?
Well, first of all, it's the first time, I think last year it was, and Ken, I may be wrong on this, but I think more veterans took their own lives and died in combat. I formed a caucus called the Invisible Wounds Caucus in Congress where we could really focus on PTSD and TBI, traumatic brain injury. And the military is doing better. When I was in Afghanistan last October, and the opportunity to be in the forward operating base, and if you're within, and the 101st Airborne actually pioneered this, if you're within 50 meters of a blast, you come off duty. And remember when we played football back years ago, if you got your bell rung and hit, I mean, as soon as you could count to three, that put you back in the game when you had a concussion. Wrong, bad idea. So what they're finding is they get more warfighters back to the fight if they get them off duty, rest them up, make sure they're okay and fit for duty before they go back. So that the recognition that this is a problem is out there now. And look, I'm a Vietnam-era veteran, and our generation of veterans was basically ignored for 20 years after the war and wasn't thoroughly understood about PTSD. It is now. And it is being treated, and it is being funded. I was looking at this next year's budget, and the VA, for our listeners, has done something that I wish the rest of the Congress would do, is that the VA passes a budget for 2 years. And I think that's a great move up. So what was happening, the federal government's fiscal year is the 1st of October. The VA would get up among the 1st of October. Congress hadn't done its job, so now they couldn't hire a mental health worker or a nurse or a physical therapist, whatever they may need. Now that's a two-year budget cycle, so they always know they've got at least as much money as they had last year, and they can fill those slots.
And, Congressman, we just have a few moments left, but could you speak a little bit about the Jobs Act that your committee helped get approved and some of the benefits to veterans of that legislation?
I can. Ken, thanks for asking. It's called the Veterans Opportunity to Work Act, the VAL Act. Four components of it. One component is called the Transition Assistance Program, or the TAP program, and that extends training benefits to unemployed veterans, basically to teach them new skills for high-tech or whatever it may be. Two is education and training. It makes it easier to transition from service members leading the military, National Guard and Reserves, reemployment protections. That's very important for reservists. And licensing. These guys are learning incredible skills in the military now, but they don't have a certificate when they leave that says, look, I can do this skill. What we're trying to do is work with the Department of Labor and so forth so that when a veteran comes out, instead of going back and taking the same courses all over again, they can get a certificate that says, hey, I'm a medical technologist, or I'm whatever it may be.
Congressman, we're going to have to take a break.
And I just really want to thank Congressman Phil Rowe of Tennessee and the House Veterans Affairs Committee for calling in and giving us some more insight on the important work that they do helping our veterans and much of the work they do with the Department of Veteran Affairs.
You're listening to the Sons of the American Legion radio report here on WVOX 1460 AM, and we'll be back right after this.